This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow the Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And they've got talent here to talk about the Orioles, the division, and everything in between. From the Baltimore Sun, he's on the Window Nation guest hotline. Let's welcome back to the show, Matt Weirich. Matt, what is up? Happy opening day to you.
Hey, fellas, how we doing?
Doing all right. And we'll start with tomorrow. Get right to it. Opening day, Gunner's on the IL. Looks like Holiday is going to be the starting shortstop. Mateo's still in Florida. Roster doesn't have to be set until noon tomorrow. So what do you? Where's Levant Soto fit in? Did Mateo do enough to prove that he's healthy? Did he hit enough to earn a spot here? How's that infield situation going to look tomorrow throughout and then throughout Rogers Center and then to Boston next week when they come here?
Yeah, today is going to be telling. The Orioles have a workout at the Rogers Center this afternoon. And we'll see if Jorge Mateo has made the trip up. I think that could be a determining factor here. Obviously, him and Levon Soto are kind of the last two guys down to that final roster spot. So wholly dependent on Mateo's ability to get into game shape. You know, the Orioles use him in a lot of different ways, and they want to be able to do so without any kind of injury restrictions. So if he's not ready, he'll begin the year on the IL with Soto there on the bench. But it does look like that Holiday, regardless, will probably be your opening day shortstop with Jordan Westberg at second and Ramon Arias at third. We maybe see Mateo in the lineup, but even if he is activated, I have a sense that he probably will get eased in. But, you know, certainly a lot of options on the table here.
Now, with Jackson Holiday offensively, struggled mightily in 2024. We all watched the games, light years from where he was at the minor league level where it was slow pitch softball for him. How different did he look confidence-wise, approach-wise at the plate as he hit over 300? He was getting on base. He was stealing bases. What's the offensive confidence level for him as you go amateur psychiatrist Matt Weirich?
Yeah, I think the confidence is definitely way up. You can see it in him. He just feels more comfortable, not maybe doing everything for the first time this time around. You know, I think that having the opportunity to come to the majors last year and struggle is something that he was able to take a lot from. And ultimately, after making a lot of tweaks to his swing over the offseason, he went into the winter with a plan and was able to execute that plan and now is kind of moving forward with it and not having to make as many adjustments, especially with the toe tap and everything that he has going on and what is a bit of a complicated swing. So, you know, last spring, he obviously hit the ball really well. It was a lot of power, but I think it's a lot more telling that the strikeouts are way down. He's stealing bases. This looks like the kind of Jackson Holiday that we were expecting to see at the major league level, and I'm interested to see how that translates to the regular season.
Now, with the Orioles as a team offensively, as you know, Matt, you cover them on a daily basis. Midway through June, late June, they were arguably the best offense in all of baseball. Then the second half, they were kind of the exact opposite in a lot of categories. The runners with scoring position, the K's were up. A lot of bad things were going on. Well, Gunnar's not going to start the year. Santander will be playing against them tomorrow. They brought in O'Neill. Rutschman had a great spring. Same with Kowser, Mountcastle as well. What's the offensive ceiling for this team as you see it and saw it up close and personal down in Florida?
Well, obviously getting Gunnar Henderson back into the lineup as quickly as possible is priority number one. He's their MVP candidate, their best hitter, one of their best base runners, brings a lot of power potential to the plate and hits in the leadoff spot, so he gets up to the plate more than anybody else. So for all those reasons, they need Henderson in the lineup for this group to reach his full potential. But I think there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic about this lineup. You know, second most runs scored in the majors last season, and they can be even better. Yes, they lost Anthony Santander, but, you know, bringing in Tyler O'Neill, having Heston Kjerstad get more at-bats, seeing potentially improvements from Ryan Mountcastle with the wall being moved in, maybe Colton Kowser taking a step forward in his second season, Jordan Westberg getting more comfortable, Adley Rutschman bouncing back. There's a lot of ways that this lineup can take a step forward, and I think that the potential, we haven't truly seen it yet. As these guys continue to get more years in the majors, get into the primes of their careers, you know, there certainly is room. You know, obviously the lineup has been the talk, the rotation has been the talk all offseason, and just how much equipped it is to make a deep postseason run. But there is plenty of reason to believe that this offense can carry them to a strong season. And really, you know, maybe they have to lean on it more than ever.
Great minds think alike. Speaking of the rotation, we know Grayson's not going to be part of it anytime soon. And I guess Kyle Gibson perhaps could be there early May. But Cade Povich pitched well in September, pitched great throughout the spring. What's the optimism level for this guy? He's added a new pitch to the arsenal. It's one of them new names to a pitch that people have been throwing for 100 years, which I can't think of right now, Matt Weirich. But Cade Povich, the Bob Haney optimism level is pretty high, but then again, I'm usually wrong.
Yeah, no, I feel the optimism too. The kick changeup, as you alluded to,
there you go.
Is that new addition to the arsenal. We saw in September what Cade Povich can do when he puts it all together. His strikeout numbers in the minor leagues were very strong, and it's something that as you get more comfortable in the majors, you expect to be on the uptick. So I see a lot of reasons to be excited about Povich. Obviously, being a left-hander, I think gives him a bit of a leg up as well. And just to stick in the rotation, he's going to have to fend off Kyle Gibson, likely. He's probably the candidate to be knocked out once Gibson is ready to return around May 1st. But at the same time, you know, it's up to Povich now to show that he isn't the one who needs to be bumped and maybe to force the Orioles to make some tough decisions. So he'll get the home opener, and I'm excited to see what he does with it.
Do you think that they are slow playing Gunnar, and do you anticipate him being back next Thursday?
Yeah, I mean, he's getting lots of at-bats down in Sarasota right now. He obviously was already kind of in game shape, not coming off of a major injury in spring. So I think that for right now, they're taking things cautious. I would expect him to come back as soon as he's eligible. It sounds like he was pretty close when they had to make the call to put him on the IL. But ultimately, you know, I think that they're looking at it like it's March, not October, and you know, moving forward, they're going to have him back pretty soon.
Matt Weirich, Baltimore Sun. Orioles start tomorrow in Toronto against the Blue Jays. Look, we all think the Orioles are going to win 110 games, and we'll save that as the season rolls along. What do you think of Toronto, though? Maybe the biggest disappointment in baseball last year.
Yeah, I mean, the AL East is so tough, and somebody has to bottom out in that fifth place spot. And last year, it ended up being Toronto. Dealt with some injuries for sure, ended up selling at the deadline, which I think tanked their overall win total a little bit, you know, getting Kikuchi out of there. Bo Bichette dealt with a lot of injuries and really wasn't himself when healthy. He's someone I expect to bounce back year from. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., obviously, he's in a walk year. They bring in Max Scherzer. They bring in Anthony Santander, some notable additions. Jeff Hoffman there now is the closer at the back end of the bullpen. So it's definitely a team that I think can be competitive in the AL East. I think any of the five teams can be competitive. And, you know, we'll see where things stand here in a couple of months because, you know, it's anyone's guess really right now which team comes out on top.
Matt Weirich, Baltimore Sun. Matt, appreciate the time. I hope you had a great time down in Florida with spring training because now it's going to rain Monday, it seems, for opening day. We'll see you down at Camden Yards.
And right now it's snowing, so I'm getting it all.
Word. Here's Matt Weirich, everybody. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan, coming back by yourself. We'll talk some college hoops with Scott Docterman from The Athletic. We'll talk about the Sweet 16. Arkansas is a 10 seed, but everybody kind of on that bandwagon right now.
Are you buying?
Great cash, homie.
Or are you selling?
I'm not going to buy into that crap.
Vinny and Haney.
Sponsored by Window Nation. Right now from Window Nation, buy two windows, get two free, and pay nothing until 2027. Offer ending soon. Schedule your free estimate at 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com.
105.7 The Fan.
81057 The Fan. A woman crush Wednesday. We have a ton going on the world of sports. Opening days tomorrow for the Orioles and a lot of Major League Baseball teams. Sweet 16 resumes, or actually starts tomorrow. Scott Docterman from The Athletic joining us at the bottom of the hour. We've got another draft profile coming up later on in the show, and plenty going on in your sporting life for sure. But let's count some midweek money, hopefully, by ourselves.
Yeah, Bob, it looks like I'm looking at the St. Louis Cardinals on my phone, if you catch my drift.
A lot of red.
Yes.
Yes.
The Dow is down 48. The S&P is down 50. NASDAQ is down 306. DraftKings down $1.41. Under Armour down 9 cents. $5.99 Under Armour.
What's up with all the gloves and the shoes and such with the NFL? I figured we'd be a little bump here.
We got a drop.
Nolan, just give us some good news here.
Well, I don't understand how the jerseys can be with Nike and then you've got other athletic wears for shoes and gloves and all the other stuff.
Well, the helmets are totally different. Shoulder pads are probably Riedel.
And I'm thinking that players have shoe deals with other companies.
Yeah.
Maybe it's for like the coaches or the refs or something.
No, because normally, Bob, what used to happen was, you know, like when it was, like when I remember, fact, because when I was at San Fran, let's say like Jerry Rice was a Nike guy, but Under Armour were the shoes. They'd spat them, you know. They would spat the shoes, you know, so you couldn't
cover up the logo.
Up the logo, and then, you know, that's what they would do. So, it's going to be because I've not heard a lot of good things about Under Armour shoes unless they've improved.
Unless they're free.
That $5.99 is what I'm not digging right.
Yeah, Jimmy Pat's outside. Are his Under Armour football shoes any good?
Right.
All right, well, we're going to start in the NBA today, where the Milwaukee Bucks, they're not at the top of the Eastern Conference standings, but how legit are their finals chances? If you ask some fans, the presence of Doc Rivers makes that conversation really a non-starter. His well-discussed track record of choking away 3-1 leads, that came up again this week, and he said, quote, "It's a part of my legacy. There's nothing I can do about it. I got a team that was an 8 seed up 3-1. That's not bad coaching. The one with the Clippers is the only one that got away. I don't get enough credit for getting the 3 wins. I get credit for losing. What if we had lost in 6 games? No one cares." Are you buying or selling, Bob, Doc's frustration here?
I'm selling it. He does have an NBA ring because he was the coach of the Celtics when they won, and he was coach of the year in Orlando way back when. He ain't getting that ring this year. Because Dame Lillard's out for the season, in all likelihood, blood clot in his calf. That news broke last night. And that Lillard, Giannis and Antetokounmpo duo has not really lived up to expectations. If you're being told that you suck multiple times, you're going to eventually have to defend yourself. But I'm not buying the old Whambulance thing there. He's had teams that should have gone deeper in the playoffs that didn't.
Over to the NFL, Calais Campbell wants to keep playing football even at the age of 38. Now, if this was anyone else, you'd probably roll your eyes, but for Campbell, really found a lot of ways to stay productive, at least 5 sacks in each of his last 4 seasons, a trusted veteran presence as well, and with the Ravens in need of a replacement for Michael Pierce, could a reunion be in the cards? Kevin Ostreicher seemed to like the idea when he joined us yesterday. Vinny, are you buying or selling that the Ravens would be interested, though?
Yeah, I'm buying it. And I think, Nolan, it probably happens after June, you know, so their compensatory pick form, you know, they don't lose out on comp picks. So don't expect anything to happen quickly.
Now, it seems like he'll have a lot of suitors, though. I mean, when I Google his name, every team under the sun has got some sort of link to him with, you know, this team, a Campbell, good fit for the Cowboys, good fit for the Steelers. It's you name it. Everyone probably wants
him. But what's the one thing that has eluded him throughout his career?
Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm. This
and he
scenario.
Wanted to come. I mean, they were trying to trade for him, and he was going to go to the Ravens if they, you know, had lost or what. So I think Calais will be, if he plays, he'll be in Baltimore.
Go over to Major League Baseball here. Mike Exesa, friend of the show, had an interesting piece this week for CBS Sports where he made a bold prediction for every MLB team. And here's an interesting one for Pittsburgh and Paul Skenes, where Exesa says the young ace will surpass 300 strikeouts in 2025. Well, that's not too crazy considering he had 170 in just 133 innings pitched last year. But Exesa takes it a step further, says he'll be surpassing that milestone in the fewest innings pitched ever. Ooh. That record currently held by Gerrit Cole, who had 326 punchouts in 212 innings in 2019. Are you buying or selling? Skenes can do it even faster.
I'll buy that. That kid's a stud. I mean, that thing is just, that ball, fastball's got movement, his secondary pitches, they're coming in at high 90s, 100 miles an hour. I mean, he is a generational kind of player. And the one thing you hope for is health. Because that kind of curtailed Steven Strasburg, because they aren't they kind of connected to some level, the dominance they had at the collegiate level. Yeah, I'll buy that. For sure.
Eventually, where? Dodgers or New York?
I have no idea. Hey, if I'm just enjoying him in Pittsburgh for now instead of paying his check at this point in time. And he even said, hey, we owe you, talking about the Pirates fans. So we owe you something. And for a guy that's not even a full year service time, I think that's a pretty strong statement.
Great facial hair, too. It's always important for a pitcher.
Looks like Spencer Strider, who looks like Dylan Cease. And name another pitcher with a mustache.
All right, we'll go back to the NFL here. The Vikings, they removed themselves from the Aaron Rodgers sweepstakes, which led some to believe that J.J. McCarthy has already been anointed the starting quarterback. But according to him, says not so fast. In a recent interview, says he hasn't heard anything from the team, but that's okay with him. Keeps the hunger there for his return from injury. Now, the crop of veteran options on the open market, it's shrinking even more by the day because Russell Wilson, he's heading off to New York. They need to add somebody, that's a fact, because McCarthy's the only one on the depth chart right now. Question is, will that person actually challenge the young quarterback? Vinny, are you buying or selling that there will actually be a camp competition here for Minnesota?
Selling it. I thought McCarthy, he was going to win the job before he got hurt, because he was playing really well, you know, in the preseason games. So I don't buy that at all. And I mean, the only one they got on the roster right now is Ripien, other than J.J. McCarthy. So for him to say they haven't promised him anything, I mean, it's like, duh. You know, you're the 10th pick of the draft. The other dude's, what, undrafted free agent.
And we'll close with this here. Only the elite remain in college basketball right now that we've reached the Sweet 16, especially with the lack of upsets to this point. Truly feels like the best teams in the country will get a chance to make a Final Four run. And Chip Patterson, he's reseeded the remaining field. Duke is the new number one, in his opinion. But Maryland comes in at eighth. That's ahead of three seeds, Texas Tech and Kentucky, and fellow four seed, Arizona. As Chip says, the Terps have fallen right in line with their predictive metric rankings that always seem to favor them a little bit more highly than the AP voters or the committee did when it was all said and done. But are you buying or selling, Bob? This is an appropriate placement for Maryland.
Yeah, I'll buy it. I mean, their net rankings has them in the top 10. Their four losses, what, they 15-4 in their last 19 games, and all four losses were buzzer beaters for all intents and purposes. They got their hands full tomorrow. And when we did our brackets, what, last week with Jimmy Patsos, I had them losing this game. And I still think they will lose. We'll do our official prediction tomorrow. I'm going to be wanting them to win as much as anybody. But I think eight, if they get by Florida, they're going to be the team people are picking to get to the Final Four, whether it's Arkansas or Texas Tech. So Chip Patterson's a smart guy. He comes on with us, and he proves it every time we talk to him. Not surprised he picked Duke number one, though, being from North Carolina and all. But anyway, we'll talk more about the NCAA tournament when we come back. Scott Docterman from The Athletic, what does he think of this Sweet 16 and the whole Kevin Willard drama, which is yet to be settled down in College Park? And then we're going to do our Orioles predictions offensively coming up at 1 o'clock. Got some NFL lunch, as we talked about earlier. Russell Wilson has a new home. Justin Fields went to the Jets. So that means the Steelers need a quarterback, unless you're counting on Mason Rudolph. What does this mean for Aaron Rodgers? Let's get this one settled. And then we got a draft profile coming up. We're going to Ole Miss. And then Brian DiArdo, we'll talk some NFL with him as we're less than a month away from the NFL draft. Cam Ward, is he now the solid, rock solid, not even a trade could get him out of Tennessee? You're going to hear that game on this radio station. Our coverage begins at 6:30. The Orioles start tomorrow afternoon, so a big sports day here locally in the Charm City. But joining us now to talk about March Madness, which resumes tomorrow, from The Athletic, he's on the Window Nation guest hotline. Let's welcome into the show, I believe for the first time, at least since I've been here, Scott Docterman. Scott, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us here in Baltimore.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I always appreciate it.
Now, we had Derek Queen from Baltimore make the game-winning shot, brag to the world, and it was great to see that he's from Baltimore. That's why he had the confidence to do so. Also said after the game that Kevin Willard's the guy that pays him. That's why he's here, and that's why he does these super terrific things. So as great as the buzzer beater was, and it was great, first Sweet 16 in 9 years, Kevin Willard's drama has almost buried the fact that Maryland is in the Sweet 16. Villanova is still very much connected to Maryland's head coach. What do you think of the news cycle that has been the last, say, 5-6 days for old Kevin Willard, Maryland basketball, and maybe Villanova when it's all said and done?
Yeah, it's really tough. And as you mentioned, Maryland getting to this point for the first time in 9 years, you think that would be a cause for celebration. Maryland has a rich tradition and history, and Derek Queen's shot is the one true buzzer beater, or probably the signature moment right now of the first weekend, what we saw, and going into a really fun matchup, I think, with Florida. But as you mentioned, I mean, what's going on with Maryland's athletic department? You know, losing the AD, Damon Evans going to SMU, now with Kevin Willard. Will he go to Villanova? Will he stay at Maryland? I mean, the things he said about Maryland, very transparent, but things that usually don't get said when you're in an NCAA tournament. That is overshadowing it. And what happens next? Whether even if he stays, how is Maryland going to be able to compete in the Big Ten when it's been, a financial struggle for a long, long time? It was really tough when they were in the ACC, when they were able to make that transition, that they borrowed a significant amount of money from the Big Ten while they were not a vested member, and that totaled about $125 million. And then some of it has been kind of marked off, but then they've had to repay that, and they will repay that through 2027. And when you're not making a lot of money in football to go along with that, there's a lot that they are struggling with as an athletic department. And then you throw it over to basketball, which, again, they have, number two in the Big Ten, but really as good as anybody in the Big Ten. And with the starting five is capable of winning, getting deep in the tournament as anybody. It's really kind of a shame because this is a very competitive team.
Yeah, very reminiscent of 2010-11 when Gary Williams was about to retire and Ralph Regan was forced out and Kevin Anderson. The good old days of dysfunction and brokenness, I guess. But speaking of off-the-court drama, well, Todd Golden had his own at the University of Florida, but they've been a machine for sure last month or so. How did he overcome that? And how tall is the task for Maryland, or maybe for Florida, for that matter?
Yeah, that's its own issue that right. Really hasn't gotten his own. I think people have tried. We've tried. We've had reporters on it at The Athletic. The Todd Golden situation. It just it hasn't quite reached. The Florida has pushed it aside and determined that there's been no foul on his part. There are other people involved, but I would say, winning, unfortunately, in some cases, kind of covers up a lot of that. And Florida is, to me, maybe the most balanced team when you're talking about the tournament at large. I mean, you look at what they were able to do in the SEC, which had seven teams reach the Sweet 16. They were second in scoring, third in scoring defense. You have, in just about every single category. I mean, in efficiency, they're as good as anybody in the country. And probably the one area that makes it difficult for Maryland is they're very deep. They could play several positions, 8, 9, 10, and rotate and not really miss a beat. Whereas with Maryland, again, their starting five is tremendous. But once you get into those positions. If you get into any kind of foul trouble, you know, there is a significant drop. And I mean, when your fifth scorer, I mean, you have five players who average in double figures, and then your number six is at 3.5 for Maryland. That's going to be a real struggle to try to compete with Florida for 40 minutes. And they're going to have to hope, and you know, that nobody like Julian Reese or certainly not Derek Queen gets into foul trouble, because if that's the case, then it could be a tough loss and probably a non-competitive final 5 to 6 minutes of the game.
Scott, staying in that bracket, the West, how live of a dog is Arkansas right now?
Oh man, I mean, you know, they're only a 5.5 point underdog, and the way they played against St. John's, which is a tremendous defense, really puts them in that category of being a dangerous team. But you know, they didn't shoot the ball lights out from three. Neither team did in that game. It was just, we looked at the matchup and the coaching matchup and the way Arkansas was able to kind of pull through in some key spots. But they're not a real efficient team. Texas Tech is and has played really well throughout the season. And to do what they were able to do to Drake, which was clearly not one of the more talented teams in the country, but certainly was one of the more difficult matchups because of the way they played defense and the way they moved without the ball and the efficiency that they had, I think showed a lot from Texas Tech. So Arkansas is going to be a trendy team from the SEC, but I think in a couple of areas like rebounding, they're not real strong, and in turnover margin, they're not real good. So I think that's something that Texas Tech can exploit. And of course, if Arkansas shoots the way that it did from three against St. John's, that this will probably be the Red Raiders' night.
Hey, Scott, other than the Villanova job still being open, I think every other big job has been taken. Who got the best of the best thus far? And the other part is if Willard goes to Villanova, who would you think would get the Maryland job?
Well, yeah, that's a multi-million dollar question there with Maryland. I think there's a lot of candidates that should be wanting to flock there, but again, in this new era, you have to start looking at who has what's the NIL. That's always like question one now. I would say in the Big Ten, it was interesting. I think Ben McCollum going from Drake to Iowa was a home run for the Hawkeyes. Fran McCaffrey did a nice job there over the years, but they didn't get to a Sweet 16. They never won a Big Ten title. I think Ben McCollum brings a different approach, and I think that's a really good one. I think Darren DeVries going to Indiana from West Virginia was a really cool move for them. I think he brings something different to Indiana that they've tried, they get the five stars, they get these super freshmen, but then they never really put it all together because they don't have the infrastructure on the floor around them. I think Darren can kind of bring that and bridge that and bring some toughness, which I don't know that Indiana's had for a while. So I think both of those two are really outstanding hires. And with Maryland, that's a really good question, because I think it's a good enough job that a sitting power conference coach would want to go there on the surface. But then if you start to dig into the money issues and what kind of support Maryland can provide, whether it's through NIL, probably assistance and that sort of thing, what can they provide internally? I know Maryland is going to pay up to the limit. I was told that they're going to pay up to the 20.5 once the House settlement goes through. But beyond that, through the collective, that's going to be what really is the differentiator. And if they can't provide a number that satisfies coaches, because the first thing they're going to ask is, why is Kevin leaving? Then they're probably going to struggle a little bit. And Kevin Willard's done a really good job, and I think Maryland is a great job if you can get the right kind of money. So I'm anxious to see how this all turns out.
Scott Docterman, The Athletic, talking some college hoops, 88.8 and 105.7 The Fan. Scott, appreciate the time. Enjoy the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight, and we'll talk to you before the Final Four, hopefully.
All right. Sounds good, guys. Thanks so much.
You got it. Scott Docterman, we'll come back, reset the program for you. Got NFL Lunch coming up, top of the hour. We got a draft profile at 1:15 going to Ole Miss, and we'll talk some NFL. Brian DiArda, less than a month away from the draft. Free agent winner so far in the National Football League. Oriole predictions, we're not going to have a big old segment to get into now, but we'll start with offense real quick. Who will lead the Orioles? in batting average. Batting average. Who will be the highest averaged Oriole? Given the official number, you know, we're not like talking 7 for 10 mm-hmm. in a call-up. But given, say, 400 at-bats, 350-plus, who do you see leading the Orioles in that category?
There's actually a few names I could go with here. I mean, you got the obvious with Gunnar Henderson, that he could probably lead them in all offensive categories. But I'm going to go with Jordan Westberg. And this is more about his approach at the plate. He was one of the few guys in the lineup last year who, when he's standing there at the plate, he's not looking to swing it for the fences every time up. He's got a very balanced approach. He's content with a single. He's content with just getting on base any way he can. So I think that favors him. And I believe amongst all the starters last year, full season starters, he was second in batting average.
Yeah, 281, as you said. And for Gunnar, Jordan Westberg was 264. But remember, he missed a ton of time because I think that's a six. Yeah, 264. Mm-hmm. Mountcastle at 271 and over 400 at bats. But I think that's an interesting play, and we'll do our picks for a most valuable Oriole tomorrow. Let's just say he's in my conversation. What do you got, Vinny?
Adley. I got switch hitter. Had a hell of a beginning of the season. All-star. Back half gets hurt, I'm guessing. I think Adley's going to be that guy. I think he'll be consistent throughout.
Yeah, over 300 in the first half of last year was Adley Rutschman. Had a brutal second half of the season. Said he wasn't hurt and has stood by that throughout spring training. The results are very first half-like so far down in Florida. I'm with Vinny. I'm thinking Adley's going to hit over 300 this year, start the All-Star game, and be in the conversation for most valuable Oriole. Some national pundits have him as a possible MVP of the league candidate here. But that on-base percentage in the second half of the season for him, based on his he probably got on base a ton when he was 5 in T-ball. And last year just bottomed out the way that he did. He was pressing. He was swinging at balls, which he normally doesn't do. I'm with Vinny. I think Adley hits over 300 this year.
Oh, it'd be certainly impressive.
Yeah, I'm going with that. Well, Gunnar will be in the conversation, right. No doubt about it. But right. I'm going Adley. What about home runs?
This one's a little less interesting because I feel like it's just Gunnar. And it's more about who is left in that lineup. You know, no more Santander. So if he was still here, it'd be a pretty interesting race between those two guys. But all of your other power sources here, you can't really confidently put in the lineup on an everyday basis. Tyler O'Neill, Heston Kerstad, Mountcastle. I mean, he'll split time at first base. So I just don't know if anyone else is going to have the volume of at-bats to catch him.
I'm going to be in agreement with you, and I think Mountcastle will be second. I think Mountcastle is going to have a much better year because he's not going to be psyched out by the wall and everything. And he's already hit 5 in the spring. I think he'll have, you know, a very good year, and I think he'll finish second to Gunnar.
Yeah, I'm going to actually take him to lead the team in homers. Mm-hmm. O'Neill hit 31 last year and spent, what, 2 stints, maybe 3, on the IL for Boston, but that's kind of been his MO. Same with Mountcastle, though. It's all about health. I think if those two stay healthy, then we might have a real battle. Mm-hmm. But Jordan Westberg could be a sneaky 30 home run guy. Not saying he'll lead the team in homers, but I think he can get into the high 20s for sure.
Better question is, how many home runs do you see that guy hitting? So, like, you have Mountcastle being in the lead. What's the total that
33.
Gets that done? 33?
Yeah.
So he's back in that 30 conversation.
Yeah, I think Gunnar's going to miss some time there. Well, not extensive period of time, but who knows? Gunnar's a guy that could hit 45 homers. I mean, we know the power is there. They have, let's see, Gunnar, Kowser, Adley, Westberg, Mountie, O'Neill, and multiple guys that can hit over 20 home runs.
Holiday?
We'll see. I mean, he did it.
Sneaky 20. Yeah, I don't think that's crazy.
More like, I mean, Mullins was a 30-30 guy a couple years ago.
The balls were reduced.
Yeah, but I don't think Sanchez will get enough at bats. But I think the power, hey, look, they were the best offensive team in baseball for about 2.5 months. And then the injuries, when Adley got plunked or took the foul ball off the hand, the offense as a whole, that Westbrook got hurt, Mountcastle spent time on the IL. It just kind of all hit them, no pun intended, at the same time. I think the offensive potential for them, and Matt Weirich agreed earlier in the show, I think it's pretty strong. I think they've got the potential offensively to be one of the top run-producing teams in baseball.
No
doubt.
Especially
if they can hit with runners in scoring position.
They've got everything they need.
Like they did 2 years ago. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7. The Fan will come back. You want to share your predictions for the Orioles? Feel free to do so, but we'll feed you some football. NFL lunch. Well, we guess the Giants have their quarterback for 2025. Are they still going to look for one for the future? What's Pittsburgh going to do? Looks like Aaron Rodgers is either going to play for the Steelers or just retire and go enjoy his ayahuasca. Today, they're kissing LeBron James's ass on the Pat McAfee show. So, ESPN, man, they've never given him any FaceTime. That LeBron James, good to see him get a little attention.